The Victoria Police Force presents V-24. From the files of the Victoria Police, for the first time, come these true stories of unceasing war against crime, of day and night vigilance that protects our life and our property, and of the nerve center of the Police Information Bureau, V-24.
Prisoner at the bar, you have been found guilty of a truly dreadful crime, a premeditated, deliberate crime. I have no alternative but to sentence you to a long period in jail.
This is the true story of the man with the butterfly collar. George Martin was not a particularly handsome man. He had peculiar eyes, a prominent hooked nose, and walked with a stoop. His clothing was distinguishable by the fact that he invariably wore a butterfly collar. When he was still an infant, his parents settled in New Zealand. The events of his earliest years are not recorded, but one thing happened when he was only 9 years old that possibly had some effect on his future life. It was one afternoon when he returned home to his father's small shop, just after school.
Dad! Dad, I'm home! Dad! Dad, where are you? Dad! What are you doing down behind the counter for? Dad! Daddy, wake up! Daddy! Oh, that blood!
George, stop that row. Stop it. Do you hear me? Stop it, George.
Oh, Daddy. Daddy.
What are you talking about?
Over there. Daddy.
What?
On the floor. Daddy.
Let me see.
Mummy. Mummy.
Come away, George.
But, Mummy, Daddy's been hurt.
Yes, dear. I'm afraid Daddy's been very badly hurt indeed.
George Martin's father was dead, murdered by thieves. After that, George became very difficult to handle, and committal to an institution as an uncontrollable child didn't seem to have much effect on him, because by the time he was about 24, his New Zealand police record read something like this.
Age 20, 28th July, convicted of theft, sentenced 6 months hard labor. Convicted of theft, 2 counts, sentenced 6 months hard labor. Age 21, 14th November. Convicted of breaking, entering and stealing, sentenced 12 months hard labor. Age 22, 29th November. Convicted of theft, sentenced 2 months hard labor. Age 23, 16th October. Convicted of theft, sentenced 2 months hard labor.
Yes, that was George Martin's record at the time. But naturally enough, he didn't talk much about it. And Miss Agnes Fawcett, the headmistress of a girls' boarding school, certainly didn't know about it when one morning he was ushered into her study.
Do come in and sit down, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Miss Humphrey, I think we'd like a cup of tea, please. You do take tea, Mr. Martin.
That's very kind of you, if it's not too much trouble.
It's no trouble at all. Two nice hot cups of tea, Miss Humphrey, if you please. And remember, don't make mine too strong.
Yes, Miss Fawcett.
I don't think I'd manage to get through the morning without my cup of tea, Mr. Martin.
The most refreshing drink, isn't it?
Oh, yes, that's just the word to describe it. Mr. Martin, most refreshing indeed. I'm so glad you agree with me. I always say that a man who likes his tea in the morning is a gentleman, and that the world would be a happier place if more tea were drunk and less alcohol.
Quite.
Mind you, I think a glass of sherry before the evening meal is a gracious custom. Ah, but then so few people seem to be able to leave it at that, do they?
All too few, I'm afraid, madam.
Oh, but now, you haven't come here to listen to my talking, have you? I understand you've been kind enough to offer us help in our predicament.
Well, actually, my sister should be here instead of me, but Well, it was just not possible for her to come along this morning, and as I understand, you're anxious to make the necessary arrangements as soon as possible. I thought the only thing to do was to come along myself.
Oh, yes. I'm so glad you did, Mr. Martin.
Now, exactly how can I... that is, how can my sister and I be of service to you?
Well, the position is simply this. You recall the disastrous storm on Saturday last?
Only too well. Quite the worst storm in history.
Quite. Unhappily, it caused some very severe damage to the roof of the girls' dormitory. So badly damaged was it, in fact, that it's quite out of the question for the girls to sleep there until repairs have been effected. And so it is imperative that we find alternative accommodation for our girls for the time being.
How long would you require such accommodation, Miss Fortin?
For about 10 days, I understand. Would that be too much for you?
Oh, no. My sister and I would be delighted to take one of your girls for as long as you wish.
Oh, thank you. Oh, people everywhere have been most kind and generous. Ever since our plea for help was published in the newspapers, we have been overwhelmed with offers. Well, now, let me see. Where did I put my list of names? Dear, 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 I have got things in confusion, haven't I? Things have been at sixes and sevens ever since the storm. I really don't know whether I'm on my... Oh, yes, here we are. Now, yes. Well, I think I'd like you to have Shirley. Shirley, yes. A truly delightful child, Mr. Martin. I'm sure she will give you no trouble, no trouble at all.
My sister and I are very fond of children, Miss Fawcett, and you may be sure she'll receive all the love and attention we can possibly give her. How old is little Shirley, Miss Fawcett?
14.
14? Delightful age.
Oh, yes, isn't it? And I always think that at that age... Ah, this will be Miss Humphrey with our tea. Come in, Miss Humphrey. Ah, there you are, my dear. Just place it on the side here, will you? That's it. Mr. Martin and I have been having such an interesting conversation, and I'm sure you'll be happy to know that he and his sister are going to look after Shirley Booth for us. That.
Shirley, please let me in.
Shirley? Oh, well, one moment while I put on my dressing gown.
Oh, please hurry, Miss Fawcett, please.
I'm coming, dear, I'm coming.
Oh, Miss Fawcett, Miss Fawcett.
Whatever is the matter with you, child?
Oh, it was awful, awful.
Oh, now, come now, dear, try to pull yourself together and tell me what's wrong.
Oh, that man, oh, that awful man.
You mean Mr. Martin?
Oh, yes.
But he was such a nice man, dear.
Oh, he's not nice. He's horrible.
Shirley, Shirley, tell me what's happened.
I can't. I can't.
Shirley, you must.
Oh, no. No, but it was awful.
Was it Mr. Martin or his sister who was awful to you?
He hasn't got a sister.
What did you say?
He hasn't got a sister. All those things he told you about his sister and his big house, they're not true.
Shirley, Shirley, look at me.
I can't. I'm so ashamed. Oh, Miss Fawcett, what am I going to do?
Shirley, did this man attack you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he did. It was horrible.
Oh, you poor, poor child. Now, come here, my dear.
Oh, Miss Fawcett.
Now, everything's going to be all right, Shirley. Now, try not to cry anymore. Now, try not to, my dear.
Oh, I'm so ashamed.
You have nothing to be ashamed of, child. Nothing at all. If there's anyone to be blamed, it is I.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, my dear, I was just a silly old woman to take that man at his face value. I should have insisted on meeting his sister and visiting his home. Oh, dear, I failed in my duty to you. But I'm not going to fail again. I shall call the matron to look after you, my dear. And then I'm going straight to the police.
Prisoner at the bar, you have been brought here today to hear a sentence passed upon you. Before passing sentence, however, I wish to say that in all my long experience, I have rarely, if ever, come across a more horrible crime than the one of which you have been found guilty. There can be no possible doubt that your crime was premeditated in the extreme. With the utmost deliberation, you set about winning the confidence of the headmistress, Miss Fawcett. You accepted a position of trust with your false promises of love and affection. You invited a young girl to put her hand in yours. Just how badly you betrayed that trust, we all now know. Just what harm you have done to that young girl, we may not know for years to come. We thank God that she was able to escape you when she did. And we can only pray that with the passage of time, she may be able to forget. George Martin, I am going to sentence you to a long period in jail.
So once again, George Martin went to jail. But he was to be released later and was to extend his criminal activities further. In a few moments, we'll continue this true story from the files of the Victoria Police. This is a true story from the files of the Victoria Police. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. A few weeks after his release from jail, George Martin was again before the courts. This time he was found guilty of obtaining money by false pretenses and was sent to jail for 12 months and reformative detention for 3 years. He escaped from jail, was recaptured and returned there. By this time he must have realized that New Zealand wasn't the best place for him, so he came to Australia. It wasn't long before he saw the inside of jails in New South Wales, and after that, of South Australia. So back home to New Zealand he went. And in a matter of months, he was charged with assaulting a young woman and stealing. And this time he received a total of 11 years imprisonment and was declared to be an habitual criminal. By the time he was released, he was a man of 45. And it was at this time that he migrated to Melbourne. Now he tried a new technique. He marched into the office of a daily newspaper.
Can I help you?
I want to insert an advertisement in your classified section.
Yes,
sir. I've written it out in one of these forms here. Do you see if that's all right?
Aye, certainly, yes. Yeah. Wanted, young woman with good background to manage large home whilst earner in England. Good salary. Yes, sir, well, you'll need an address there. Hey, where do you want the answers addressed?
Could they be addressed to this office?
Why, certainly. We can give you a number. 345 and... put it at the bottom of your ad. Apply 345, cure this office. Then you can call in here and collect any replies at your convenience.
That sounds quite all right.
Well, now, that'll be 6 shillings, sir. And your ad will be in tomorrow's edition.
I'd like to speak to Miss Jean Clark, please.
Speaking? Who's that?
My name is Brown, Miss Clark. You answered an advertisement of mine for a housekeeper.
Oh, yes, Mr. Brown.
Do you think you could come and talk it over with my wife and myself?
Do you think I might do for the job?
We think so. When would it be convenient for you to come out?
Oh, almost any time would suit.
Well, then, shall we make it this evening?
Yes. What time?
Or shall we say... 8 o'clock?
Very well. Where do I come?
Well, if you could meet me at the Carnegie station, I'll drive you to my home in my car.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Not at all. Then I'll look out for you at about 8 o'clock at the Carnegie station. Miss Clark?
Oh, I didn't hear you coming. You're Mr. Brown, are you?
Yes, I'm sorry to be a little late, but my car's broken down.
Oh?
I did my best to get it right, but I just can't make it go. So I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to walk.
Oh, I don't mind walking.
It's not really so very far. We can take a shortcut.
Very well. You're going to England, are you, Mr. Brown?
Yes, about a fortnight.
I'd love to travel someday. Must be wonderful.
Everyone should travel, I think.
So do I.
You've got plenty of time. You're still only a girl.
I'm 22.
Are you? Don't look it.
Oh, you're just saying it.
No, I'm not. I really mean it. You know, I've got a feeling that we're going to get on very well together.
I hope so, Mr. Brown.
And I'm sure my wife would like you, too. You know... Oh, here we are.
You don't live here, do you?
Oh, dear, no. This is just an open paddock. My house is on the other side of it. Come on, we'll cut across here and go in the back way.
But isn't it rather dark? It's awfully lonely around here.
Yes, but it's much shorter this way, and I know every inch of it. I've lived here for years.
I think we'd better go round by the road.
No, this is much better.
Please, Mr. Brown.
We're going this way.
No, I'm... Oh, no.
Yes, my dear, it's a pistol.
What are you going to do?
Persuade you to go the way I want, Miss Clark. Oh. Across the paddock.
Oh, no!
Shut up, you little fool. Shut up or I'll shoot you.
Let me go!
No, no. You just walk straight ahead. And remember, this pistol's right behind you.
Police headquarters.
Oh, thank goodness. Come quickly. Come quickly, please. I've been attacked by a man. Oh, please, come quickly.
That was the first of a series of attacks on young women that startled Melbourne. The advertisement technique was very successful. The victims of the attacks gave reasonable descriptions of the men concerned. And there was one thing about their descriptions that left the police in little doubt that one man was responsible. In each case, the offender was wearing a butterfly collar. But it was almost impossible to get a lead on him until a young man walked into police headquarters.
You have some information for us, Mr. Price?
Not information exactly, Sergeant. In fact, I could be barking up the wrong tree altogether. It's about my cousin.
Oh?
The other day, she answered an advertisement for a housekeeper.
Yes?
Well, I'd been reading about the chap who's been putting ads in the paper and then attacking the girls who answered them.
Yes?
This morning, my cousin was rung up by a man who said he was a Mr. Collins. He asked her to meet him outside the Carnegie Station.
I see. When?
Tonight.
What time?
At 8:15.
Hmm.
Do you think it could be the man you're looking for?
Yes, I do. I think it could easily be.
And do you think my cousin should keep the appointment?
Certainly not. We'll keep it for her.
You will? But he'll be expecting a woman.
There'll be a woman there to meet him, all right. A policewoman. Carnegie's the station after the next woman.
Is it?
I'll be getting off at Caulfield. I'll arrange for a car to pick me up, and I'll be in the vicinity of Carnegie by the time you get there.
Good. Senior Williams will be there too, won't he?
He should be there now, dressed in the uniform of a railway porter. By this time, he should be busy with his act of sweeping up the platform or something. I'd like to see him doing a bit of real work for once.
Wherever did you get a uniform big enough for him?
It's not big enough. It'll have to do. Now, you all clear about everything?
I think so. I'm supposed to be Patricia Davis, who was answering an advertisement for a housekeeper for a Mr. Collins.
Right.
When I get to Carnegie, I just stand around until Mr. Collins makes himself known to me.
And if he's wearing a butterfly collar, he's probably our man.
Yes. When I'm sure he is, I drop my gloves, and you and Senior Williams run up and grab him.
That's it exactly. And be careful. Remember, he carries a pistol. If he suspects anything, he might use it.
I'll be careful.
Looks like this is where I get off.
See you at Carnegie.
I'll be there. Good luck.
Hurry on, please. Hurry on there. Right. Tickets, please. Oh, tickets, thank you. Tickets, thank you. Tickets, please, madam.
Good luck, Norma. I think he's on the other side of the road. Chap with the butterfly collar.
Thanks.
Excuse me.
I beg your pardon?
You Miss Davis?
Yes. Oh, you must be Mr. Collins.
Yes. How do you do?
How do you do?
I have an apology to make.
Oh?
Yes, I promised to drive you to meet my wife, but I'm afraid my car's broken down.
Oh, well, it doesn't really matter.
It's not really a long walk. We can take a shortcut.
Yes, I... Oh, bother.
What's wrong?
I dropped my gloves.
I'll get them for you. There we are.
Oh, thank you.
And now, shall we go?
Huh? Oh, yes, yes, of course.
This way, then.
Something's wrong. Where are the men? Where are they? They couldn't have seen me drop my gloves. Can't go too far away or they'll never see me. To drop them again. Now. Oh, I'm so sorry.
What's the matter?
I've dropped my gloves again. I don't know what's wrong with me tonight. Oh, where's the second one? Ah, it must be here somewhere. Yes,
here. Just a minute.
What's this?
Police here.
No, you don't.
Grab him, right? I've got him.
What's this all about?
He wanted to talk to you in the station master's office.
What about?
Let's go into the office.
Very well. I'm very sorry about this, Miss Davis. I haven't an idea what it's all about.
I have, Mr. Collins. I'm a policewoman.
What?
All right, in here. Close the door, right?
Right.
Now, Mr. Collins, we want to ask you a few questions.
George Martin, alias Mr. Collins, denied any knowledge of the attacks on the girls. Several advertisements and letters in reply were found in his pockets. He claimed he'd picked them up in the street. But when he was later positively identified by two of the young women he'd molested, he changed his story and later wrote a lengthy statement containing many hundreds of words, which purported to explain that he was a victim of circumstances. He claimed that a stranger had asked him to insert certain newspaper advertisements. He described the man in detail. His height, age, color of hair, his manner of walking, his clothes, his car, and where and when they met. It was a most ingenious attempt to escape punishment. But there was one important catch to it. The mysterious stranger was nowhere to be found. In fairness to Martin, the police made every effort to find him. And no doubt, so did his solicitor. But, of course, no such man existed. And George Martin was duly brought to trial. The charges against him were serious in the extreme. And when the jury found him guilty, he was sentenced to death. A sentence that was later commuted to life imprisonment, with his papers marked, never to be released. The story of George Martin is a warning. Never go anywhere with strange men, however innocent they may look. Don't keep appointments with strangers unless you take a companion with you. They're simple enough rules, but they're often forgotten. And a girl or young woman has little chance indeed against the strength of a determined man. Only names, place names, and dates were altered in this true story. It was dramatized from the files of the Victoria Police by Roland Strong, who now says goodbye until the same time next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, D24, which is brought to you by the Victoria Police Force and produced in the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.